Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. We are giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streamed live at richarddugan.com, archiving the podcast at the radio show's page on SoundCloud and iTunes. We are also on Facebook as well as Twitter. And today's program is going to be, I think, interesting for you as we are here in the merry, merry month of May. One of the things that I remember, and I bring this up on occasion on this program, I talk about this fairly regularly. I read a book, and it was made mandatory by my boss at the time. This book was called Who Moved the Cheese? And my guest may be familiar with this book. And I said, okay, fine. And basically, it had to do with change. And I read the book cover to cover. I thought it was kind of cute. I enjoyed it. I got the moral of the story. I went to my boss, though, and I said, look, I don't have a problem with people moving the cheese. Just tell me. Tell me you're moving the cheese. That's all, so that I don't go looking for it where I thought it was going to be. I have this problem sometimes on the job, a lot of times at home when I'm going to look for something and it's been moved. It hasn't been put back where it was. And it's a little frustrating, but then I just have to stop. So, okay, it's here. I don't know where it is, but somebody does. And so I start querying. Well, my guest on the program today is going to be talking about an easy to read, fun book about the serious subject of change, Conquer Change and Win. Ralph Massengill Jr., thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Glad to be here. I understand you've got great weather, and so do we today.
Indeed, indeed. And we hope that this great weather will last here in Santa Barbara on the central coast of California. We had one summer, believe it or not, that was cool, and we would have marine layer on a fairly regular basis, and it was really nice, but a lot of people didn't like it because it was cool, and the fire danger was low. They wanted warm temperatures and sunny skies, and hey, I understand that. That's why a lot of folks come to California and the West Coast. Nonetheless, as we all know, you wait a few minutes, as they say, I think in Kansas, you wait a few minutes and the weather will change. That's pretty much the case.
No, that's in East Tennessee.
Is that in East? Okay. But change, obviously, as the saying goes, is the only constant in the universe. And it's fascinating that we as human beings have gotten ourselves so wound up over the issue of change, especially in terms of the fact that, well, again, things are changing. You and I, even as this interview is progressing, each of us is changing. We're getting a little older second by second. That's part of the change. And we're exchanging ideas and concepts, and the conversation and dialogue hopefully is edifying both of us in some fashion, as well as our listeners. That is a change. And I know that there's more than that. I also know, too, that in the context of your book, Conquer Change and Win, which I find interesting, Conquer Change and Win, there's almost a paradox there, because I often hear the same construct when it comes to relationships, specifically marriage, that it's a battle between the two, and one of them is going to win. I mean, that's the way it's portrayed on television, especially. It's like, wait a minute, I thought we were supposed to be a team. But you talk about 100, one of the things that we will be able to glean from your book is 100 plus ways for you to have more happiness and wealth. And certainly we're all looking for one or both of those. 30 ways to beat fear, 14 smart ways to handle risk, which I think is an interesting aspect to it. 10 ways to make better decisions. This list goes on and on. 11 tips on creating your vision. Extremely important. We'll talk about that as well. 11 reasons why we 11 reasons we all resist change. 12 signs you may be suffering from anxiety. I don't need 12. I can give you one. five important results of any negotiation. I think one of the aspects, and I want to throw this out to you in reference to change, that Greg Braden mentioned on this program some time ago, and that is that there is greater quality of life, if you will, productivity, if you will, in a relationship of, and that's, and I'm going to use the term relationship in terms of you versus or you and the rest of the world, whether it's spouse or children or coworkers. There's a greater sense of fulfillment, et cetera, in relationships that are cooperative as opposed to competitive. Let me have you talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, this is not a contest. Let's just go with your example, which I think is an excellent one. A man and a wife should not compete with each other for various and sundry things, including attention. It's about a relationship, and a relationship that is successful is always about positive negotiations. Negotiations is the key to making sure every relationship you have works well. It is a give and take, and the most important thing is that you never quit talking, because communication is key. If you want me to do X, and I don't know that you want me to do X, then there's a very good chance I may not do X.
Let me throw something into the mix real quick here, Ralph.
Sure.
We currently have, and I don't know, be honest with you, how successful this guy is. I hear certain elements, and again, I'm not wanting to get into a political conversation here. More of a what you're talking about as far as negotiations. One of the things that frustrates me about business as well as this concept of negotiations, and I think it's best epitomized by, I hate to use a Star Trek reference, the chief engineer of the newer model was asked by the captain to accomplish a task, and he says, how long do you think that'll take? So the engineer replies, X number of hours. Well, there was an older gentleman who was also an engineer of the previous starship, and after he gets off the comm, the older gentleman says, you know, if you want them to think of you as a miracle worker, you don't tell them exactly what it is, how long it's going to take. You tell them it's going to take even longer so that when it takes less time, you look like a miracle worker. So, laddie, how long is this really going to take? And he says, it's going to take X hours. And it's like, why is it that we have to play that kind of a game? Why can't we just come straight out, be honest, and say, this is what I want? This is where I want to be. End of story. I'm not trying to be a hard-nosed person here in this negotiation. I'm just telling you honestly, I'm not going to start at the moon and work my way down, because I don't want to waste time. I don't want to waste energy.
Well, I can understand that. And again, people always in negotiation, and this is almost universally true, and certainly in a negotiation, I will probably do this same thing, and that is that I always start asking for a little more than I really want, because I want to be in a position, and there's the key word, it's called positioning. I want to be in a position to be able to negotiate by giving you something you ask for without it hurting my goal.
All right. I guess it's the frustration is in that, you know, we end up getting what it is that we want in the long mm-hmm. run, but look how much time we've expended, and I personally think it's time we've wasted.
Well, we could have been productive in
that respect.
Well, I agree with part of that. The thing that has to be understood, it all depends on how close you are to the same answer or to the same goal. And the closer you are, generally speaking, and people don't understand this, but the closer you are, the tougher it is to get what you want totally.
As I used the example from that particular book that goes back to the 80s, if I'm not mistaken. And again, I thought it was a cute mm-hmm. story.
I did too. I loved that book. I thought it was funny, and there was a lot to learn from it.
Yeah. But at the same time, am I still, so to speak, on the wrong side, if you will, of conquering change and winning by saying,
no.
I don't mind if you change something, just tell me? Or am I still struggling with the whole concept of change?
Well, it is not so if you understand the emotions that change always brings, and that you understand in change there is always pain, stress, or anxiety. There are no exceptions. And you already have that information. You believe that information. And because you do, you can control your emotions that change brings to you, which makes your pain less than most folks.
Okay.
So you've not done anything wrong. You've done a whole bunch correctly.
Well, and I think that one of the things that is interesting, and we're certainly wanting people to get a better handle on change because of the fact that, again, that's the nature of this world is change. I remember sitting in Mass as a 7-year-old, and I would blink, and then I was going to try to blink twice really fast. And that both blinks would be exactly identical, meaning that not just the blink itself as far as my physical, personal space is concerned, but that the whole universe in those two blinks, it'd be so fast that nothing would have moved. However,
well, that's impossible.
Exactly. And I realized that only after spending 15, 20 minutes trying to do it. But then again, I've been
doing this for 40 years,
yeah.
So it's taken me a while as well.
Yeah. But as far as that reality, is there a specific way in which we can grasp this concept of change, which, as we both acknowledge, we've both stated, is in continuous motion. Change is in continuous motion. Is there a way? Is this an emotional thing we must shift? An intellectual thing? A spiritual thing that then will all transcend down into the physical for us to win?
Yes, and you're correct on all those points. Let me give you a part of my definition of this concept of change. Well, first of all, change is doing something different. And I believe, and the experts that I know and work with believe, as I do, that all men and women regard all change, that's all change, both good and bad, with a feeling of loss. That's an emotion, a feeling of loss. and that pit of the stomach feeling is a good way to say it. And that feeling of loss always creates some form of anxiety, anger, or fear. And let me just end that situation by saying that is the rule. It's not something we think is so. It is the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Emotions are caused by change. Change always causes emotions in human beings. We cannot change the emotions that change brings to all of us, but what we can do is we can control those emotions, and that's the secret to handling change.
Now, were you born and raised in Tennessee?
I was.
And you have, in your speaking voice, a cadence that is, I want to say, slow, calm, relaxed. You know, nothing seems to get in the way. And I have to say that there's a song that sort of epitomizes this that I've listened to, I don't know how many countless times, Rocky Top, Tennessee. And you know the line in there that talks about how we don't have any phone bills, telephone bills, and all that kind of stuff. And I wish we could go back to the way things were way back when.
Mm-hmm.
And people talk about wanting to do that. And I remember when I was working back in Phoenix for a Christian station, and I kept hearing over and over and over again, you know, we need to go back to the way things were in the 50s when things were really good and this and that. I mean, they, for whatever reason, they thought the 50s were...
That gentleman or lady is very misguided.
Well, I'm with you there because we can't. I mean, the short and long of it is we cannot go back.
Mm.
We are where
we
are.
And the other side of that is that we really shouldn't want to.
Well, I'm with you there.
You cannot relive history, and history will not completely repeat itself. Can't
mm-hmm.
happen. It's already happened.
Right.
And things are different now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's just interesting how, and like I said, I've actually listened to that song so many times, and when it gets to that space about the way things were, mm-hmm. I'm not kidding you. I get a little misty eyed thinking of the same thing, thinking, man, that would be nice. I remember as a kid growing up in Phoenix and how things were mm-hmm. on the block that I lived, and you know, I wasn't too mm-hmm. keen about the school, grade school, high school relationships, but living at home and doing the things mm-hmm. that we did, and it was such a what? Well, you've probably said this about your growing up. Yeah, well, they were simpler times, right? I don't know if.
Well, I'll, let me say this, Richard. I'm 76 years old, so I've lived a while. And I do not want to go back. I don't want to go back when there was no internet. I do not want to go back when there was no television. I do not want to go back when there were no interstate highways and there was no internet, period, and certainly no computers. My life is intertwined with all of those things, and we might say that we want to go back, but about the fourth or fifth day, in my humble opinion, they're going to try to get back where they were.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's.
We only remember the one or two good things and don't remember all of the improvements
mm-hmm.
that time has made, as well as made some very great memories. And we need to enjoy those memories, but we cannot repeat them.
I have another question for you in that regard. I sure. listen on a regular basis to several of my favorite artists when I was a kid growing up in the 20s, in the 70s and 80s. and even into the 90s, that I listen to now on my phone. I subscribe to Spotify, and I have the playlist and all that kind of stuff. And they're the only thing, as far as music, that I listen to. Because maybe it was because of the times, maybe, and yet the messages in the songs are just as relevant today as they were when they were first put out, when they were first released. I'm wondering, is that, in spite of the fact that I don't mind if you move the cheese as long as you let me know you moved it, but is that aspect of living in my musical playlists going back 30, 40 years, is there a certain aspect of me that is not wanting to change? I want to go back to when these guys, because there are three specific artists, and they're all dead. They died early, from my perspective. I wonder what they'd be singing today if they were still alive. But I'm wondering, from your perspective, is that a problem that I need to deal with, or an issue? In order to be able to truly conquer? Because it seems to me, as you've described it, because there's so many different levels and layers, that we as human beings, it's just not a quick fix. It is a multi-layered solution.
Well, it is multi-layered, but there is nothing wrong with you liking, let's say, music of the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, whatever it might be. I personally don't like a form of music that was in the 1920s and 30s. Now, I wasn't born then.
Sure.
But the rest of that, there was other music in the 20s and 30s that I still enjoy listening to. And I think that is one of the reasons that classical music seems to endure, is because it goes through all of those ages and doesn't really change from the standpoint of style.
Yeah, yeah. And I have to say that in my 20s and 30s, when I was working the midnight shift at one station, I'd come home in the morning, and even when I was working the day shift, I'd come home in the afternoon, and I actually joined a classical music CD club, and I still have all those CDs, and I would put one of those on, I'd lay down on the couch, and I'd fall asleep to those pieces of music. And it's quite remarkable. And I still remember when I was a kid in grade school, we had a course in the music class called music memory. And you had to not only memorize a piece of music, and of course, obviously, who the composer was and so on and so forth. And if you passed that, guess what we got to do? We got to go to Grady Gamage Auditorium, a beautiful Frank Lloyd Wright structure, and listen to the symphony playing these pieces. What a treat that was. And I guess that was my first introduction to classical music. And I've also heard it said, too, that a lot of musicians, regardless of genre, if they didn't get their start in the church, they got their start listening to and enjoying classical music. And I found that always so fascinating, especially considering the fact that maybe it was hip hop or heavy metal or rock and roll or whatever, folk music or whatever it was, the genre. Classical music inspired you? Wow. What power that has.
Well, there is absolutely nothing wrong with that, because that's pretty much what happened. The key to music today versus classical is the instrument and the rhythm. That you don't have to have a full orchestra to have what is considered today, and I would agree with the fact that they can have quality music without a 100 musicians.
Yeah.
Now, let me say this, that I have an SD card that is in my car that I have put together over a long period of time, and I have almost every kind of music on that CD, I mean on that SD card, that you can think of. It's about, well, I know exactly, it's 16 gigs of music. In fact, on that music, you will even find that I have a whole section on black gospel music.
Hmm. Well, believe it or not, at the Christian radio station, I was producing black gospel programs.
I love the rhythm.
Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It gets you moving. Mm-hmm. It really
does.
It does,
and it has a very solid message that's easy to figure out in most cases.
You don't have to think too much about it. It's pretty clear. But I have to say that what was so fascinating for me working at that station for 15 years and producing black gospel programs was the fact that as time went on, it was like, wow, not that I really enjoyed working on Sundays per se, Saturdays or Sundays when some of these programs were airing. But it was like when they'd come on, it was like old home week. It just felt so good. You know, and that was rather exciting.
Well, again, what we're seeing in each other is how many of the same kinds of things we both enjoy.
Let me.
And I think those that are totally listening to classical music or those that are totally listening to rock and roll are missing a huge amount of pleasure.
You've done a lot of things in the 70 years that you've been around, and you have been a part of a lot of different opportunities throughout the years. One of the aspects that, of course, is talked about in regards to conquering change and winning, conquer change and win, has to do with one of the first things that I mentioned, 100 plus ways for you to have more happiness and wealth. One of the things that I chuckle about and share is we have in our Declaration of Independence the fact that we have these inalienable rights. And of these, it's not exclusive just to these, but they're listed, life, liberty, which is a wonderful thing. We get those. Those are, boom, those are ours. Life, if you're alive, hey, you've got life. Liberty. If you're living, say, in this country in particular, people like to think, yes, we have liberty. But the third one, you don't get to have it. You get to have the pursuit of happiness. You can pursue it. Now, they don't go on to say that you get it. and I'm wondering about that in terms of happiness.
That's what I think is so fantastic about both of those instruments, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, is the genius, and I say that word correctly, in my opinion, of the writers. It's just amazing. Of course you can't be given happiness. You have to, and I know this word is not popular, but you have to earn it.
Well, you know,
and if you don't seek it, and you don't know how to get it once you start your quest, then you've started too soon. You need, first of all, to understand what real, honest, to goodness, happiness is. And once you do that, and you've defined what it is your goal is seeking, then you have a real opportunity to be successful. But there's no guarantee, even if that's done.
Do you believe that it is possible to achieve, if I can refer to it in a state, achieve happiness, or is it something that is sort of fleeting that you'll get glimpses and have experiences on and off throughout life?
Well, I think, and I'm sincere when I say it this way, I think that is a learned feeling. I don't think we start out that way. And I think that based on what happens to us, we either have a lot of it, some of it, or almost none of it. And the importance of that situation is really underestimated, because it is what you have to drive you toward what you have chosen to seek. And I think the thing that lots of folks, lots of good folks, try to ignore is that everything you do in life involves choices by you, not a group, not another situation, not a church. It is by you. And lots of folks don't want that responsibility.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Now, you use two terms in that line there, happiness and wealth. And there are those who say, I love this line, that money won't buy you happiness. And I heard this little twist on that was, money won't buy you happiness, but I'd sure like to try.
Well, and I understand, because don't let anybody kid you. Money can be of great benefit.
Sure.
And it can be a form of security. And I seek it all the time.
Mm-hmm. When and
if
I'm,
if I am a bad person for that, by being a person who believes in what America is all about, the free enterprise system, then I cannot make an apology, because that's what it is about, in my opinion.
What about the one variable that people didn't really count on, and that was greed?
Say that again.
There's a variable that a lot of folks didn't count on, and that was greed in the whole equation of the free enterprise system.
Well, yes. There is nothing positive about that word. There never has been, and it is not an incentive, as some say. It is a situation that is all about self. And it's true that our happiness is not about just receiving. Now, it is about receiving, don't let anybody kid you,
mm-hmm.
but it's really more about giving.
Mm-hmm.
Giving of your time, your effort, your suggestions, and your money.
I believe that that's a universal principle, and that you can't have one without the other. If there's going to be a giver, there has to be a receiver, and vice versa. And also, mm-hmm. that the universe requires at all times, without exception, an exchange. But it doesn't necessarily mean that that exchange is going to come in the way that you might think. I dealt with that back in Phoenix, where I had employees, coworkers, I should say, not my employees, but coworkers that I had hired or that I was working with, who sometimes would complain that, I'm not going to do this little task or that little task because you guys don't pay me enough. And I could have gone down that road. But I began to realize that with all of the opportunities that I had been given, I was being compensated not by the employer through my paycheck, but through the interviews that I was doing, the contacts I was making, the conversations I was having, the materials that I was getting. For example, I have a copy of your book here in my hands, Conquer, Change, and Win. And all of those different things, where I've even taken some of those contacts from those days. And fortunately, many of these people are still alive, and I'm interviewing them again here on this program. So I received compensation for the work that I did to keep the station on the air, et cetera, but it wasn't from the source that you know ordinarily think. And I think that probably is one of the biggest problems I think folks have, is that they expect the return to come from the source Again, in this case, they're an employer, and you know, you kind of have to, you have to take a broader, I think you have to look at the bigger picture in things, and
if you're receiving from your position or job money and nothing else, you are one miserable person.
True. But at the same time, if you're receiving nothing but a paycheck from that one employer and you are a miserable person because of that, wouldn't it also stand to reason that maybe you need to take either A, you need to consider another job, okay, nothing wrong with that, or maybe you need to take another look at how you are looking at that exchange. I mean, yes, you know, you're putting in your 8 hours and you're getting that paycheck at the end of the week or the every other week, whatever it is. But what about the friendships that you've made on the job? What about the ability you have to put food on the table and have your phone and all of the other accoutrements that go along with living in the city in which you live, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, that is absolute fact.
Yeah.
And the key to this thing is to make absolutely sure that we never forget that everything we do in life involves two things. One, choices. And secondly, negotiation. Now, it doesn't have to be a formal kind of negotiation, but it is negotiation, and a very solid third is communication, because you'll end up with out the first two if you're not willing and able to communicate. And 85% of communication is listening.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more there. We're going to continue our conversation because I want to get into the one of the elements there, choice, as I alluded to at the front end of the program. That's what this program is about, giving people choices and knowledge of those choices to help make their dreams come true. We'll ask you to stay tuned. We're going to continue talking with Ralph Massengill Jr., author of Conquer, Change, and Win. It is an easy-to-read, fun book about the serious subject of change. Stay tuned.
Tell me your story. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, along with my guest, Ralph Massengill. We're talking about change, conquer change, and win. And you mentioned something, one of the elements, choice. And, of course, I am not only an advocate of choice, as much as I think it's great that a restaurant has a menu that's, oh, I don't know, looking like War and Peace. It has so many choices, which is great. I don't want to, you know, kibosh that. But somewhere you have to draw the line and say, okay, I've got enough. I need to choose from these 5 million. I need to pare it down to 3 and then down to 175,000, et cetera, et cetera. And that's why I'm also a very strong advocate for education for everyone. Because without an education, how do you know what choices are available to you? And you and I both have seen, whether it's on the news or in news magazines or in the newspaper or other periodicals, where you read these stories of these individuals who grew up on whether it was the wrong side of the tracks, on hard times, et cetera, et cetera. And they finally made a decision that they wanted more than this, and they found a way to move forward, to get an education in order to know that there were other choices. The one choice that they had at that moment when they decided, I don't want to go down that road of despair and destruction. But they didn't know exactly where to go from there. All they knew is they made the choice, I want something more and better for myself and then for my kids when I have them, et cetera, et cetera. And they turned things around, but they had to make that first choice, realizing this is not the way I want to keep going. In terms of this issue of change, I mean, to make a choice, to have a multitude of choices, is to actually embrace that aspect of change, because the moment that you make a choice, you're changing your life in some way, shape, or form.
That is absolutely golden, because that's what so many folks don't realize. Well, I'm going to do this off the cuff, but if it doesn't work, I'll quit and do something else. There's always, always damage after a fire.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Edwards Deming said that, the father of the quality and change movement.
Give me that quote one more time.
There is always damage after a fire.
We can attest to that here in Santa Barbara and the Central Coast and all up and down California. There is no question.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, in spite of the fact that there is always damage after a fire, there is also a new opportunity following one of
there's rebirth that's available.
Right. Well, following one of the fires here on the South Coast, my boss and I were driving up to where the broadcast towers and satellite dishes are. We call it Broadcast Peak. And we were driving up through the area that had burned, and we were looking at a lot of the blackened trees, and they were already sprouting buds and leaves. And this was...
Isn't that something?
Oh, it was amazing. And then, of course, last summer, the fire that my wife and I were evacuated from near a lake along Highway 154, you drive down that road today... Yes, you're going to see a lot of charred, burned, and dead trees, but on the ground and in a lot of the trees that were heat-stressed, you're starting to see new growth. And it's actually, in spite of the fact that you see all of the damage, there's a beauty there of that rebirth. It's a wonderful thing. And in spite of the initial struggles that we have had to deal with the immediate destruction following the aftermath of the fires, and then, of course, then the floods in Montecito, we start seeing signs of that rebirth. And, again, there's that change.
Right.
There's that change.
I call it, when I see those sprouts come up, we had a huge fire here in the Great Smoky Mountains about 6 or 8 years ago. And you drive up there now where that fire really damaged everything, and you will see a field of green. Now, it's not tall, but it's green now.
Mm-hmm.
There's still dead trees that are burned and things like that, but the rebirth that the earth can generate is so reassuring and needs to be really talked about more than it is. Because if there is a calamity, call it a fire, call it a hurricane, call it a tornado, whatever, there is a way to recover. And the first day that happens, you need to take stock, set your goals on paper, and go for it. And I believe in this old adage that until you commit your goals to paper, you have intentions that are seeds without soil. I believe that.
It actually also is well borne out in the analogy of the oak tree that resides within an acorn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I remember hearing that. And then, of course, we live on a piece of property on land in the wilderness areas above Santa Barbara, where there are oak mm-hmm. trees that go back, I don't know how old they are, 50, 75, maybe they're 100 years old. But they're huge and they're just beautiful. And a lot of them are really gnarly. I mean, they don't grow in some uniform shapes. They're subject to the wind and the weather and all this stuff. And they make adjustments and they do all of that. And it's really kind of cool. But all of that came from this little seed. It's just amazing. And as you say, it's the same kind of thing after these fires. That's the seed right there. And then suddenly, who knows what's going to blossom. So what about the fires of life? Not so much literal wildfires and so forth, but the fires or the destruction, if you will, of life and our ability to stand up again, to get up again after being knocked down in that respect.
Well, I think that's the first thing you must always promise to do for yourself, and that is when you get knocked down for whatever reason, you must get up as quickly as possible. Set your goals, write them on paper, and go accomplish them.
Okay.
It's that simple, but it is so difficult for everybody to believe they have that ability, but they do.
Well, and that's what's interesting. There are a lot of folks, there are a lot of people who are of a faith that believes that when Jesus spoke to his apostles who were saying to him, "Hey, that's pretty neat stuff you're doing." I paraphrase, folks. This is not King James. "That's pretty neat stuff you're doing. Can we do that?" He says, "Are you kidding me? Really? You think you're going to do this, but you think that's something? You guys are going to do even greater things." And that, to me, is a message to everyone, that we have that same ability. I read a book many years ago. Actually, it was in 1982. It was called The Greatest Miracle in the World by Og Mandino, the late Og Mandino. And it talks about individuals referred to in the book called rag pickers. And what they do is they pick up the refuse of life, in other words, other people, and try to help them along. And that's one of those things. That's one of those aspects of our living our lives, you and I, that hopefully we're doing in the process of, if not this interview, your day-to-day life when you are walking around there in small town in Tennessee and communicating with people and relating with one another. James Redfield in Celestine Prophecy talks about the fact that we all, you and I, as well as collectively, you plural, have messages for one another. And it is our not only a responsibility, but I would have to say it's our honor to share those messages with one another, because it helps the other to move forward in their life. We're not trying to proselytize. We're not trying to convince, cajole, or move somebody to do something. We just kind of, just like with this program, we lay this out on the smorgasbord table and say, "Hey, if you like it, taste it a little bit. See what you think. You know, don't have to touch it if you don't want to."
All of the people in this nation who are willing to help others have a great opportunity to live in peace, joy, and happiness.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody should be a teacher. Everybody is, to a degree, an expert in something. And they need to tell that story and help others acquire that wisdom. It is so rewarding. It is unbelievably rewarding. And one thing I've learned over my life is money is a necessity, and it helps a great deal with this feeling of security as far as where you are and where you're going to be for the rest of your life. But it does not in any way guarantee anything other than that.
Mm. It's a tool.
It is.
Yeah. So
it is. And we need to, again, I want to oversay that we need to pass on our wisdom to others, and everybody has some wisdom about something.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I said I would agree with you there. I would agree that
okay.
We
yes,
are experts.
I do agree 100%, of course. But the key to this is just take, for example, you and I. Richard, you may not agree with everything I believe, because, first of all, you don't know really what all that could be now.
Mm-hmm.
But you and I do find many places in this interview, for example, where we concur with each other. We agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And well, most folks will find that true in the real world. They will take the calculated risk. More happiness and more wealth comes from three things. A calculated risk, not a risk, a calculated risk, endorsing positive change on a regular basis, and know how change affects your emotions so that you can control those emotions. That's one quick formula for happiness.
It sounds an awful lot like, and of course the title of your book is Conquer Change and Win, and it sounds an awful lot like one of the another way to phrase that would be to instead of have change influence you, now you're turning the tables. I'm now going to influence change.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm in control.
Well, I don't understand why people will not listen. Like we've said, 85% of all good communication is listening. Listening. Words in a good communication will be about 7%. Voice tone and inflection will be about 38%. And you speak the words so they can understand. You speak the voice tone so they can understand better. And your body language is far and away the most important at 55%, and that's because it's pictorial.
Hmm. You know, that's interesting, because that what flashed in my mind was an experience that I had with a general manager who basically jumped down my throat for doing something that I had done, and I acknowledged that I did it. However, he was so caustic in his reprimand that I completely forgot why I had done what I had done until 3 days later. Now, for those 3 days, I couldn't sleep. I was a basket case. Finally, I called. I said, "You need to come out here. We need to have a talk because..." And I finally remembered the reason why. And I shared all this with him. Hey, I couldn't sleep for 3 days, but I finally remember why I did what I did. And basically, he basically acquiesced. He acknowledged that he should not have done that. Well, many years later, I'm in another office with a second general manager, and he's there too. And this second general manager is reaming me a new one for something I had done, or I was being accused of doing. And I was doing my job is what I was doing. And I sat there, and this you'd go. This goes to your description of or your mentioning of body posture. I sat in what is called open body posture, where both feet were on the floor, and I had both hands
on my thighs, on my legs.
Okay, just sitting there, and I just looked at him, and I had to do everything in my power to keep from laughing, because first of all, I knew that I had not done anything wrong. Other than my job in protecting the station, which is was part of my job. But I also acknowledge that the guy who had ripped me up one side and down the other several years ago was sitting right there, and we're going through the same scenario, only this time I didn't get emotionally distraught over the process. I as I said, I had to keep from laughing. And I walked out of there realizing that, wow, I don't know how bad a day he was having, but that's not on me, you know. And I learned that
That's true. That's very true. And so many folks don't understand that you can get the results you want without losing your temper. And those who lose their temper lose.
Oh, yeah.
Now, if you lose your temper, you lose. That's an absolute.
Right.
You just do. I never will forget that saying of Casey Stengel. He said, the secret of managing is to keep the guys who hate you away from the guys who are undecided.
I like that. That's very good. I need to throw another element into the mix here because you talked about, of course, communication, obviously body language and so forth. How, what is the impact and or the effect on those elements? What is, how is social media not facilitating these elements? Or is it?
I would... It depends on the social media. There's some excellent social media, and there's some trash out there. So it's hard for me to wrap social media up in one bundle and say, this is what social media is, because what's on one, I'll just say the phrase channel, and what's on another channel may not have anything at all in common, and the way it is presented, let me just say it, the voice tone and body language makes all the difference in most cases. So social media that has a video with it or a picture to help explain it is far and away above someone who goes on some kind of diatribe. We got to remember that words correctly spoken will only be 7% of the total of voice, tone, and body language. 7%.
And words have power.
And everybody does. They just got to keep talking sometimes. And I believe that after you've made a statement, whether it's a positive statement or a negative statement, but especially if it's a negative statement, the next person who speaks loses.
You know, that's interesting because I had a general manager come to me once and he says, you know, every time I come in the room to ask you a question, you look like you look as though someone's about to shoot you or do you harm. And I actually took that to heart. So now anytime somebody comes in to the room, to the especially if it's in the control room where I'm producing a show and we're in a commercial break, I really try to, number one, make sure I have a smile on my face, try to, you know, at least, you know, not look as though oh my God, what do you want now? Kind of thing, right?
You mean what you were thinking.
Exactly, exactly. So I try to think something differently, like, well, gee, maybe he's come in here to give me a bonus paycheck, or he's given me a gift certificate to a local restaurant for my wife and I. Who knows? So let's, you know, look at this a little differently. And I started doing that, and that's actually, it has actually made a lot of difference, not only in that interaction, but in me as well, because now I'm not jumping to conclusions like, oh, great, now what?
Well, so many people let their emotions control their thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a real poor way to exist, because you need to base your statements on reality and fact. And the emotions that you use are to back up those facts.
Mm-hmm.
The emotion is not what someone should remember. They should remember the words that are enhanced by your voice, tone, and inflection and body language.
Let me ask you about our media, not social media specifically, but in general, the media, whether it's newspapers, television, radio. Going back to the early 80s, we had what was called the Fairness Doctrine, and of course, it was eliminated by the president at the time. And from my observations, that's when all of this polarized broadcasting began, because now you didn't have to talk about both sides. And I always thought that that was an injustice to the people, because I was trained in broadcasting as well as at the early stations, that was the whole point, was to give all of the sides of a particular perspective of an issue and let the listener or the viewer or the reader decide. It was not my responsibility to make up your mind. That's not on me. I don't want that responsibility. I'm just here to give you the information, which is what we do here on the program. What are your thoughts about where we are today and the talking heads, if you will, that just are going on? And again, this is on both sides. This is not picking on anybody specifically. This is on all the sides, where just people are just...
Well, that's all true. Conservatives and liberals and those in between all have to understand that the truth will set you free. And in the news media of today, it's not facts nearly as much as it is opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all opinion should be prefaced by that word, "This is my opinion."
Yeah.
But they take their opinions, which are sometimes way out there and other times still okay, but they are speaking opinion as if it were news.
Right.
And it's not. It is not the news. We've all heard this thing of fake news. Well, I think that's pretty good way to look at some of these folks, because they're into opinion that they're trying to pass off as just that, news. And it's commentary. It's not news.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. It is just that, and it needs to be stated as such. This is commentary. This is an editorial. This is not news. This is not fact. And the other aspect of it too is, are you also of the belief that even though it's only 7%, that words do have power?
Oh, absolutely. But that whole phrase that's been brought out just assumes that we understand that it is also about communication, and that body language, voice tone, and then words. Words are the least important of the three ways we communicate well. And nobody will believe that until you... I do, when I give a seminar, many times I will do an experiment just as a demonstration. And I will say the word yes, Y-E-S. I will say it 7 different times. And I ask the audience to tell me what that yes means. And almost invariably, they get it correct.
Yeah. So it's not what you're saying, but it's how you're saying it.
I could say yes with a harsh tone, or I could say yes like I'm understanding, yes. Or I can say yes, or I can say nonchalantly, yes, yes. And I just said the word yes. That's all I said. So why shouldn't it be the same? It's because the word is only 7% of communication.
Interesting. Very interesting. Before we let you go, I want to thank you so much for so much time that you've given us here on the program. Greatly appreciate this conversation and would love to continue it should you ever choose to leave the hills of Tennessee. We'd love to see you out here on the West Coast and have a conversation in studio to continue this conversation. This is fascinating, and encourage people to go.
I appreciate that, Richard, and if you're ever in East Tennessee, give me a buzz, and I'll take you to lunch, and might even show you a moonshine still. You can't tell.
Well, I'll tell you, it's they're still all over the place out in the east. I'm sure down southeast and of the country, because it's not necessarily illegal, but it's what people like. It's what the folks like, and that would be very interesting.
You could get moonshine now bonded in a liquor store. They're selling it that way now.
Yeah, I know, but when I read the proof. The numerical proof on the side of the bottle, I'm going, I think I'll put this in my car instead.
Right. Well, sometimes it's amazing what people will do that's not necessary.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me ask you, how do people get in touch with you? What is a website that folks can go to get more information about conquering change and learning how to win at this, I'll call it a game. It's part of life. It's an easy-to-read, fun book mm-hmm. about the serious subject of change. Where do we go?
Right. Well, I believe that life is a game because a good life has rules and regulations. And those that don't have any of those live in chaos. But the way to get a hold of me is through my website, which is www.massengill.com. Massengill is spelled with one S and two L's.
And that's M-A-S-E-N-G-I-L-L.
The book is available on Amazon and Kindle.
Well, I am very excited about the prospects of maybe fine-tuning my ability to conquer change through this particular work. And again, I thank you. Before we let you go, I have 3 final questions. And again, massengill.com will be linked to your website as well, so folks can get more information and follow up. First question is, who is Ralph Massengill?
Say that one more time.
Who is Ralph Massengill?
Ralph Massengill is a child of God who believes very strongly that people are inherently good.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you are doing now?
Well, it is about education, and like you said, I believe education is vital to a proper education of facts and not opinion, is vital for the family, for the nation, and for the world.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
You're going to have to say that one more time.
What is your life's purpose?
My life purpose is really very simple. It is to love.
Well, Ralph, once again, thank you so much for joining us. And again, I encourage our listeners to pick up a copy of your book, Conquer, Change, and Win, an easy-to-read, fun book about the serious subject of change. Ralph Massengill, Jr. has been my guest. And again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.